never forget the first moment when I walked in Cure Cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the fifth Scan On podcast of 2018. Niall Murphy is currently on the red carpet at the IFTA, so I'm Darren Mooney, I'm filling in. And joining me are...
Grace.
And Nicola.
And we're going to take you through the week that has been in Irish film. So just in terms of, we're going to start with, as usual, what we watched recently. So just anything that we've seen recently that's not in, say, the top 10 or coming out this week. Then, you know, just sort of our opinions on them and maybe talk a little bit about them. So Grace, what have you watched recently?
Well, the most recent film I saw was The Shape of Water, but I assume we'll be talking about that a little later on.
Yeah.
So we'll save that for then. Otherwise, what films have I watched recently? I've been revisiting some classics, so I watched The Crow again with my housemate on Tuesday.
The old Brandon Lee one?
Yes, which I haven't watched in years.
I've never seen The Crow, would you believe?
It's wonderful.
Oh, really?
So they tell me.
Okay.
So they tell me.
I can't bring myself to watch it for obvious reasons, the Michael Massey scene being the one in question. Where...
I think that specific scene was restructured.
Yeah.
So the way it originally played out with, unfortunately, tragic consequences is not the way it's depicted in the finished film. But I do think the way everything is handled is really sensitive. Like, the theme is much more poignant because of what happened in real life as well. And the look of it is very vivid. It's very striking, I think. And just
who directed that, actually?
Alex Proyas.
Oh, Proyas, the guy who did, like, Dark City.
Yeah. Yes. And did he do one of those Gods of Egypt type movies?
I think he did. He may also have done that horrible movie where Nicolas Cage gives his children to the bald alien.
The rabbits.
By the way, you can hear that is our fourth and final panelist, Daniel. How are you, Daniel?
Good, how are you?
Daniel is joining us a bit sort of...
I'm sorry.
It's in the pants, but it's grand. But yeah, so I would be a big fan of Dark City.
Dark City's great. Obviously his big start was with The Crow. Which was a very kind of sad way for him to start his career before coming from music videos. He's sort of gone downhill.
Unfortunately.
He has. It's sort of, you become a sort of a sense of dread when you hear there's an Alex Proyas movie coming.
I'm still hopeful all the time. For no good reason.
I think I hold out a little bit of hope for The Crow reasons as well.
That's a ringing endorsement. Gods of Egypt is not terrible.
No, it's on Netflix now.
So you can watch and grimace.
Remember when he was good? iRobot's not bad either.
Yes, actually. Yeah,
iRobot is okay.
With these sneakers, these retro sneakers that you can buy right now.
I didn't mind the product placement as well. People were mad about it, but there are products in the world. I don't see an issue.
Perfect. So we're running through what we saw this week, Daniel, or recently, just in general, that isn't sort of top 10 related or isn't coming out this week or anything like that.
Sure.
Anything you've seen?
Random stuff. Watched Coco, but we hadn't seen that when it first came out, so it was all right.
Ring endorsement for is it better than Gods of Egypt?
Yes, certainly.
I cried and cried watching.
Yeah, well, I suppose in the wake what's the Pixar one in Inside Out?
Yes,
it's kind of very hard to make a new Pixar film. I think after that, I think they sort of peaked.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was as good as Inside Out, but it's nice. It's sweet.
Yeah.
It's got a kind of weird, oblique message. It's one that you don't really expect. It's about how you should look after old people, kind of.
And the memory of old people.
Yes, the memory. So it's kind of, it's not believe in yourself, which is every cartoon.
You're keeping people alive in your memory.
Yeah. So it's a lovely message, but it's a little bit odd. And I didn't think the songs were very good.
It had a very sort of recent Disney feel to me. It was like, on quality scale, I'd argue it's more like Tangled or even Moana than, say...
It feels more like a really good Disney film than a Pixar film, which is sort of a slap in the face for a film.
It's very good for a Disney film, but not great for a Pixar film.
Yeah.
Sorry if I stepped on someone else talking there.
No.
All right.
No, we're nowhere near that ordered.
We only just started.
Yeah.
I suppose... The one I watched this week, I watched a few films this week. We saw Peter Rabbit the other day.
How is Peter Rabbit?
Diff films.
Way better than you expect.
All right.
I don't know.
is it a good Disney film or a good Pixar film?
It's an above average Will Gluck film.
Okay.
It's a very specific type of film.
I thought it was pretty entertaining. Like, I mean, I'm not James Corden's biggest fan.
No.
I'm not his biggest detractor,
I don't
probably.
Hate James Corden.
Get
what?
I don't particularly have strong feelings about James Corden in general.
Okay.
But.
Well, I mean, I don't hate the man because I don't know the man. Like,
I hate the idea of the man.
I hate the persona.
I think he's quite a good singer, if that's anything. And he does get to sing a little bit in this one as a rabbit. But, you know, he gets to sing a little bit and everything. Yeah, it's kind of a bit of a slapstick comedy. Like, there were gales of laughter from the children every time people got flung across the screen, like, so that was that's good. You know?
Well, I mean,
target audience capture.
Well, it is, because I mean, you get used to modern animated films like Coco, to pick an example, sort of catering to an adult audience, as opposed to, there's a tendency, it can be hard to figure out when you're watching a children's film that's actually a children's film, whether or not it's actually a good children's film or it's just pandering in places.
Oh,
yeah. So why in some cases it's good to see it with an audience to actually get a sense of the reaction to it.
Yeah, they were into it. A lot of people falling over, which.
Which
I love it when people fall over. That's why I still like Adam Sandler. Silence.
Yeah, the James Corden gets a defense. But,
And then Cloverfield Paradox, which I gather you probably talked about last week.
We did, but I mean...
I thought it was fine. Yeah. Like, I quite enjoyed it to a certain degree. Like, partly because if you have any kind of a spaceship, I'm pretty much into it. Like, you know, what was it?
But it moves a lot, though. It does change
location. It floats in space.
Yeah. Like,
so it's a ship. Like, they float on the water. Like, it's,
sure.
Anyway, it's close enough. I can't even remember what the pink thing was called. But, you know, you got a bit of your pseudoscience in there. You know,
the God
thing,
particle.
The glowy thing.
What?
The sand.
I don't remember that either.
It's a whole experiment.
Yeah, but it's the God particle thing they're trying to break, isn't it? It's like the Large Hadron Collider, basically in space, is what they're
doing.
It's a great endless.
Oh
yeah, the big glowy thing. Yes, sorry.
Every science
the whole
fiction
film
everyone.
Is about. Glowy.
And then no, I forgot about that. It was.
I forgot the color.
I
about.
Definitely did enjoy it more than other people. So,
yeah,
I haven't seen it yet, so this is all perplexing to me.
you'll be watching it and you'll be like, oh yeah, the pink thing. Yeah.
Of course, like.
That's what they meant.
Yes. How did Daniel and Darren not register that when they were watching it?
It's worth a watch, probably. I don't know.
I mean, it's free, right? If you, as long as you have Netflix, it's free.
Yeah.
Well, that's the argument. Is that like that's how Netflix can get away with doing stuff like Bright and this is because
like
Bright
either.
You didn't like Bright?
I didn't hate it. No,
yeah,
okay,
it's
fine.
But that's
it was free.
That's it exactly.
It's kind of, but it's such a bizarre model that. Quality doesn't matter anymore. It's all about volume.
Yeah.
If they can say we released 80 original movies this year, people will watch them.
Yeah.
Even only four of them were decent.
Yeah.
I haven't even watched the good ones.
Well, that's it.
Okja is supposed to be good, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Bloodbound's right. Still sitting
haven't
there.
Haven't seen Bloodbound.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a new
but
one.
Bright, you know, you've got space, aliens,
and
warps all over it.
But I mean, I was reading for something else I was doing, everything that Netflix, when they were doing DVDs, their most... like overdrawn DVD, implying that it was the DVD that you rented from them and you didn't watch, was like Hotel Rwanda and Schindler's List, which are these big, worthy Oscar-winning dramas. And they find that people would actually rent and return the really terrible movies.
Okay.
I mean, does that mean people were keeping Hotel Rwanda or Schindler's List? But they theorized that it was like you rented them and you put them on the pile to watch and just never got to them.
Oh, okay.
I would kind of think that. I mean, there's one film I borrowed, Braveheart. I still haven't seen Braveheart, by the way. I borrowed Braveheart off someone for 3 years, and I didn't watch it, and I had to give it back to her with a box of chocolates. I felt so bad about it.
Oh, you could have just read the historical story.
It's all right. Come
it's a good historical, you know, sort of like, it's
yeah.
like,
23 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, God. Sorry, I'm registering that.
But it's like an old school sort of historical epic, where it's less about the historical and more about the epic.
And about Mel Gibson.
Yeah. When
it's
you,
good.
It has a great soundtrack.
Brilliant soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
James
the
Horner.
Is beautiful.
Sad James Horner.
And the cinematography is absolutely beautiful as well.
And it was
someday,
filmed
guys.
Here.
Someday
what?
I'll watch
and
it.
Was filmed here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with volunteers from the Irish Defence Forces, who were apparently unmanageable for Gibson.
Disturbing.
Well, now.
The
rugged wilds of Wicklow, they all just lost their mind.
Yeah. No, I think it was more they just gave lip, really, was the issue.
I'm not used to that.
He doesn't like that.
Yeah.
My cuddle director.
But, so myself, I watched, what did I watch? I watched the My Neighbor Totoro and A Grave of the Fireflies back to back, recreating the.
One of my favourite films ever.
Which one?
Totoro.
Grave of the Fireflies.
Really?
Yeah.
Still haven't seen it.
What do you mean, really?
Okay.
Every time I go to watch it, somebody warns me that it will destroy me, and I'm like, maybe I won't.
It's a bit, that's a bit of an exaggeration.
I don't know.
Well, you can take it up.
No, basically they were released together in 1988, so I went and watched the actual double feature for the 30th anniversary. And you start with Grave of the Fireflies, which is the good call.
Mm.
Apparently, when they were screening it originally, they started with Totoro, and then found the people...
put you in this lovely, happy mood, and
found people left halfway through Grave of the Fireflies because they just couldn't take it.
But the ending's so much worse.
Whereas, yeah, I mean, if you're leaving halfway through Grave of the Fireflies,
you're doing okay.
Yeah, there's still some hope that this movie might not end horribly. But I watched them both back to back, and it's amazing. Totoro is just like, it's great on its own.
Yeah,
watch back to back with Grave of the Fireflies, it's like I imagine drugs are. It's like everybody just hooks up sugar to your vein. It's like Grave
you
of the Fireflies,
this. You need this,
tumbles you into the ground. And then Totoro was like, imagine the world is like a loving place where people care for each other.
Yeah.
Like, I'm
and
there for this.
And there are buses shaped like cats.
Yeah. And there's actually, in the Ghibli Museum, they actually have Studio Tour, they actually have a cat bus that kids can crawl around in, which is great fun as well.
Wonderful.
And I finally got around to watching Logan Lucky.
Yeah.
Which is the Soderbergh film from last year, the Hillbilly Ocean's 11 with Channing Tatum and Adam Driver.
Mm-hmm.
And really, really liked it. It's a Soderbergh film.
Yeah.
It's got that sort of chaotic vibe to it.
Sorry, really, really liked it. It's a Soderbergh film. What?
It's not...
I'm not a big fan of Soderbergh.
No?
Perhaps,
his
like,
thing.
You know.
Okay.
But certainly Logan Lucky, I thought, was surprised. It's a Soderbergh film. And I enjoyed
it. It's a controversy.
It still felt like a Soderbergh film to me. Like, all of his films just feel very subdued in a certain
way
to me.
They're also...
And it still felt like... I don't know. I remember coming out of it and just feeling like... It was just fine. I had no strong feelings one way or the other.
Yeah, he never commits to a genre.
Right,
yeah.
I did like it. I thought it was a little bit less low-key than some of the other ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I think about Haywire,
the one that's shot in Dublin and has the taxi ride in the middle of its action scene.
So
its geography is correct.
Yeah.
And
it's supposed to be an action film and it's a snooze fest.
There's a really good fight in it.
There's low-key and then there's
fight.
You know.
I think Haywire really suffers from its lead, though, because like Gina Carano is great, but she's not a leading actor. She's a bit of a charisma vacuum on screen.
Mm.
I think.
Yeah, I think the right level might have been, was it Fast and Furious 7, where she was like the bad guy henchperson?
Yeah, she was just sort of in six.
Bit part.
Fast 6.
Yeah.
She's fine in that supporting part, but I think, she didn't really have the presence, perhaps, to carry.
But I mean, the thing I liked about Logan Lucky is that like you have that thing that Soderbergh does where he's gotten to the stage where he doesn't structure his stories particularly tightly.
Hmm.
So you have a bunch of stuff that doesn't really add up. Like you have a whole bunch of characters in Logan Lucky.
Hilary Swank.
Yes, that don't need to exist. Like Hilary Swank, Seth MacFarlane and Sebastian Stan.
Hmm.
Like you could cut all those characters from the movie and it would be a much tighter film.
I literally don't remember any of those characters.
That's about right. Yeah.
She's like the cop.
She's the cop. Her partner is what's his name?
Macon Blair. Random.
And
Seth MacFarlane is like an English.
He's a British energy drink maker who's sponsoring a NASCAR
driver
who is Sebastian Stan, who literally appears more as a cardboard stand-in of Sebastian Stan. So like you could cut all of these things out of the film, and it would arguably be a much better film. But I like that Soderbergh's at the stage where he's like, "Hey,
just
throw it in."
Just
Seth MacFarlane do a funny accent. Sebastian Stan. Do a scene
just
and pose for a standee. And it sort of works.
Yeah. I don't know. It was kind of instantly forgotten, I think, by everybody. Even though it was his comeback after two years
he
of
retired,
pretending.
Retired
and was really busy making a TV show and then came back and made a movie.
And really busy, editing, Raiders of the Lost Ark as a silent film.
Oh, yeah.
But
then since then he's made Mosaic and another movie. Like he's, I don't know, retirement doesn't seem to be a word that
I
works
like
for him.
And was he cinematographer on Magic Mike XXL or something? He did something where he didn't direct, but he was a cinematographer.
I'm not sure, because he always does that where he's his editor and a cinematographer, but he names himself differently.
Yeah.
Wasn't he supposed to have written Logan Lucky but used a fake name?
Yes, a fake lady name.
Yeah.
To appeal to the F rating.
which is horribly cynical.
He says it's not true, but no one has been able to track down the lady.
Yeah, that was one of those kind of like emerging conspiracy theories that I was like instantly subscribed.
Yeah.
Just polishing my tinfoil hat.
To be honest, there are probably less believable, less unbelievable conspiracy theories. All right, then, so let's talk about the week in film in terms of stuff that's happened in the week in film that we're sort of interested in and sort of like what's been happening film-wise. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we talked about Netflix and the Cloverfield Paradox earlier on. Like, they paid $300 million to steal out Ryan Murphy from Fox, which is quite astounding, which is a huge investment for them. Basically, he'll be producing a slate of original content for them, which is, I think, a very good investment.
Yeah, great. I mean, American Horror Story has done brilliantly on Netflix for them. And arguably, he's a person who doesn't belong on network TV.
Why? Because his sensibilities are so... Well, but he's on FX, I suppose. So.
Yeah, but it's still... I mean, it is Fox. There's certain things he can't do, even though he's got away with amazing stuff on American Horror Story. So yeah, I think it's a great move for him. That hopefully means that Netflix content will improve rather than just being farmed out nonsense.
Well, that's it, because we were kind of thinking about this, myself and Grace sort of were talking about this earlier. Like, Netflix, in terms of prestige television, they have Orange is the New Black, and that's about it, right?
I suppose Ozark did okay for them, and it was...
Well, Ozark always felt like a sort of a cut-rate Breaking Bad. It was like Breaking Bad meets Sons of Anarchy, and one of them is, you know...
Yeah, I don't know what their big stuff is. I mean... Everybody just watches whatever appears on Netflix, and they talk about everything being Netflix original when it really isn't.
Yeah, the Star Trek Discovery is branded as a Netflix original over here, or The Good Place is branded as a Netflix original over here.
Well, I mean, Star Trek is
stuff as well, like The Expanse and Riverdale.
Is
Netflix over here.
So we're blowing the lid off. Get your tinfoil hats on here. Well, I mean, they're breaking into... They're doing a lot of investment in co-productions in Europe at the moment. They've got something like 90 co-productions all over Europe, including, like, the UK and stuff. They're working with, like, BBC on several dramas. They've done stuff like Dark in Germany, which sort of broke out, apparently. That did very well internationally as well.
Yeah.
I really need to watch that.
I need to finish watching it.
It's a bit slow. It's worth watching them. I've heard that they're doing lots of stuff in Europe, but they haven't done anything in Ireland yet, as far as I know, which seems... I mean, it would seem like something like The Young Offenders would do very well on there.
The Young Offenders film is on there.
You would think that they would want to get involved, maybe for season two or something.
I wonder if there's an element of, like, picking a primary market for each language. Like, so for example, like, Netflix has been trying to break into Latin America, and so they sponsored... what was the girls? About the girls who operate the...
Cable girls,
where they operate, like, the phone system and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently that was a big investment for them because they wanted to get into South America.
Okay.
So they figured Spanish language content would be a way to do that.
They did that sci-fi one as well. What was that called?
Altered Carbon?
No, the sci-fi thing, Spanish language. You could watch it in dubbed English or in Spanish.
3%.
3%, yeah.
What's 3%, actually? I haven't heard. There's so much stuff on Netflix.
It's about a future where you all compete. Only 3% of the population gets to go to this special...
Yeah, it sounded a bit like Elysium in like...
And Logan Paul movie I discovered only existed recently. Thinner, wasn't it? Something like that from, like...
Is he in a movie?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was in a movie and he was supposed to get a sequel, and then that whole thing in Japan happened.
Wow. Gross.
But it was like a YouTube original movie. Of course it was.
Netflix brings me a lot of great Korean shows, and for that I am very thankful.
Yeah.
But it breaks down borders.
Otherwise, where would I find them, to be frank?
Well, that's a really interesting thing. Netflix expands into a new territory, like, more recently, India and Korea, and then we get a bunch of their stuff. it's like traveling without having to go anywhere. Thank you, Netflix.
Yeah, traveling in genre, as it were. But yeah, I wonder if that's maybe the reason why you don't see Netflix, like, investing as heavily in Irish content as you would, say, British content, because, like, if you want English language content, you just partner with the BBC.
Mm.
Plus, from a cynical perspective, Americans are really into certain forms of British television, if you know what I mean. So those are the ones that seem to get pushed, I think.
But even in terms of British content, I mean, what is a...
The Crown is really popular.
The Crown is massively popular.
Really popular.
There's also... They're doing some stuff with... I can't remember the name of the BBC One, the BBC Two stuff, but it's... they are doing a bunch of sort of prestige stuff. They're doing, like, Troy, I think, with the BBC in adaptation, which has already caused a certain amount of controversy in certain circles.
Okay.
But
how so?
Because it casts the cast of Black Lead.
And
that is, yes, certain parts of the internet... Despite the fact that this won't air until 2018 or late 2018, are already very, very upset about that. because the internet is a terrible place.
Oh, speaking of random controversies and Peter Rabbit, that came up this week.
Oh, the food bullying!
Bizarre.
There's a scene in the movie where
it sounds really weird because I read something about it and was like, okay, this sounds a bit exaggerated, and then went into something else, and which now I haven't seen Peter Rabbit. When they described the scene, it did sound somewhat violent or something.
Well, it's a bit violent.
It's a children's movie though, like, which it always involves the absurd amount of violence.
It's violent like Tom and Jerry,
But the really weird thing is that in the scene in the film stops. Peter Rabbit looks at the camera and says, "I hope we don't get any emails." Like, he literally says that. He literally addresses the controversy as it's happening. So I just, like, I don't understand how people can have an issue. Well, again, they're having an issue with a film they haven't seen, which is always a problem. But they diffuse it in the film, and it's, I mean, no one's saying that you should go and throw berries at people who are allergic to them. I don't know, it's kind of all gone mad a little bit.
It is a little bit absurd, and part of me wonders if there's some sort of like a Sony marketing team who saw the film and were like, this is a great way to promote the movie. Astroturfing, is that what it is, where you fake a grassroots movement?
Because
I remember, like, the first thing I heard about it was the backlash to this boycott.
Yeah.
Was like this sort of like Daily Mail type quality of like, they're taking away these movies for our kids.
The backlash to
the
controversy.
To the controversy, yeah.
Which is like the internet being this crazy thing full of like circles of. Yeah.
I hope it's not a viral marketing campaign. If so, I'm not sure it's working.
I don't know. I can't imagine people actually being turned off by that, like, because I mean, it's also, if like, I haven't seen the movie, but my intimate knowledge of the Peter Rabbit canon tells me that, like, it's a movie where the lead character's father was baked into a pie.
Definitely part of it. It's quite cruel at times, or certainly
there's
quite
a lot of that stuff in the books, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I feel
about,
like,
you know, cats almost becoming kittens, almost becoming dumplings, and like giant rats trying to eat them, and you know, it seems very benign when you're a child, in fairness, and then you grow up and you think, oh, that was a bit weird.
But yeah,
Tom Kitten was almost eaten by an enormous rash.
I can't imagine people being upset by blueberry throwing, even with, like, allergies. And was it food bullying, I think, was the term that was used to describe it?
People are very sensitive about food issues these days.
And people with blueberry allergies are particularly sensitive to having blueberries thrown at them, apparently.
Poor Donald Gleason. He has a horrible time in that film, but
he signed up for it.
He deserves it.
And there was some other like wretched looking romantic comedy thing he was. I just saw the trailer for it last year and I can't remember the name of it, but Christina Applegate was in it too.
He did About Time, right?
But you look at it and you just think, what part of you thought this was a good idea? Why did you do this?
Relatively early in his career, I think he probably just does a lot of stuff because he hasn't been a lead in very much.
Yeah, I
mean, it's only really About Time and then stuff like Sensation. I can't really think
and
of much
Goodbye Christopher Robin and stuff like that. Like he's come on. You've actually got to see him evolve. There was a while, like 2 or 3 years ago, when Donald Gleason was in everything because he was in a supporting role.
Yeah,
he's still kind of in everything.
Well,
he's in a lot, but he's just so much known for being an English person now. His English accent is really good, and he's English in almost everything that he's been popular in.
For the moment, or hit the moment where he gets that Oscar nomination and spends the following 6 months explaining how to pronounce Dumbnail to audiences around the world?
Yes, probably. Yeah. I'm sure he's had to do it a bit.
So in terms of other stuff that happened, Irish Horror, actually. It's been a good week for Irish Horror. The Cured and
The Lodgers,
Both got release dates this week. So The Lodgers is coming out in March, and The Cured is coming out in April.
Yeah.
The Cured, I think, is showing at ADIF. Possibly.
Yes, it is.
Sunday night or
Sunday? Yes, Sunday week.
So I think you may, if you're listening, still be able to get tickets to it. It stars Ellen Page.
It's sold out. I think
Ellen Page and Tom Vaughan Lawler. But again, if that's the case, you have to wait until April. It's about a cured zombie apocalypse, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah. So there was a short that came out about 3 or 4 years ago, which was like a prequel to it. Same director and same writer, starring a girl from Red Rock.
Stephen
actually,
Frayne, is it, or something like that? I think is the name.
Yeah, David Frayne.
David Frayne.
And yeah, it's about people who have been cured of their zombieism and come back and try and integrate it back into society. So that's a really interesting setup. The prequel was more about before they really figured out the cure, and now the film is
the aftermath of
how they're trying to come back into Ireland.
That's great. It's an Irish horror movie starring Ellen Page as well, which is quite a casting coup almost.
Yeah, there was some stuff with her running around and Donnybrook, I think, but it must be nearly 2 years ago now. But yeah, it's great. She was here for a while. It's a pity she's not been over for Edith.
Well, then in a couple of years, we'll talk about Blake Lively doing the same thing.
If they ever finish the film.
If they manage to, yeah, I suppose. And The Lodgers, then, is also from the director of Let Us Pray as well. And it's yeah.
Which was decent.
Looked fantastic. It's got a really good sense of atmosphere.
Which one was that?
But with Liam Cunningham.
Where he's in
crows.
Prison, but he's also possibly Satan. He arrives in Northern Ireland.
The police station
ones. Yes, the police station ones. It's basically, Assault on Precinct 13 meets Prince of Darkness. It's a very good John Carpenter homage. It just makes no sense. Yeah, that would be the issue. Few films are, though.
But it was decent. The Lodgers also looks very pretty. It was shot in the most haunted house in Ireland.
Really? I didn't know that.
It was shot in, what's the big hall? Loftus Hall or something?
Where
they do the ghost tours at Halloween. So I think it's the only film to ever be shot there, and it looks... Yeah,
it's
good.
Really atmospheric, and it's got this nice gothic atmosphere running through it as well. I don't think we're allowed to talk about it until like next week or whatever. But
I have not seen it.
Oh, okay, cool. It looks very pretty. Would be the thing to say about it. Very atmospheric.
Enjoyed the trailer. That's what I can say because I also haven't seen it.
it is, and that will be out then in early March as well, which would be good as well. Which is it's quite nice to see. So alright then, so with that in mind then, we'll move on to the top 10 this week in Irish cinema. At number 10, a new entry this week, the 1517 to Paris, directed by Clint Eastwood. Very little seen and no real comment on. This is the one where you use the real guys from the real story,
which is crazy.
I couldn't believe that Clint Eastwood made that. Because I saw a few ads for it on the telly and I was like, oh, that sounds a bit weird. And then I saw... an article about it which said it was a Clint Eastwood movie and I was like I think you click into it and you're like really?
But Eastwood, to be fair, Eastwood has like as much as there is an
Eastwood
archetype.
I just feel
archetype.
Like you would have heard a bit more about it if it's a Clint Eastwood movie.
But I mean,
you know,
he makes what, one or two movies a year? Like he's the non-problematic Woody Allen at the moment. He's the guy
given time.
But he's got the Bird and that sort of stuff as well. Like he's done all these films that people don't really think about when they think about Eastwood and this would be kind of one of them.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would be like ranking this on their Mystic River style.
No, it'll be instantly forgotten. And I think using non-actors for a film or for a story this dramatic is probably not the best idea.
Yeah. The true story is harrowing. The guys are absolutely 110% heroes, but there is an issue with using people who are not actors, perhaps as actors. Then at number 9, still in there. Perhaps surprising a little bit with its success, Maze Runner: The Death Cure, which is Wes Ball's conclusion to that young adult trilogy, which made
there's always
no
a film
cultural.
In these top tens, which just proves how many kids there are in this country.
don't worry, they just dragged
the cinema.
There's more than one though. I think this is more aimed at like the teenager, the people who would have read the books.
They're kids to me now.
Is that how old we are?
I have to say, out of all the, so I keep getting these three young adult series mixed up, which is Maze Runner and Divergent and
Hunger Games,
right? Even though I should know the Hunger Games because I actually read that one, but. The Maze Runner, I do think, as much as I enjoyed The Hunger Games, I enjoyed the books a lot more. I didn't really connect with the films, probably because of the books. I think The Maze Runner has the best story out of all three of them in terms of the evolution of where the film started and where it ends up. Like, you know, when you see the first film and it's all about the Glade and it's all about the kids there, you would never imagine
where it's going to end up.
Like, and you know, I think The Death Cure is a worthy ending to the story. Now, again, I haven't read it, so I don't know if those people will be wholly disappointed.
I liked parts of it, and I also didn't like parts of it. Like, I liked how cynical it was in places, in particular. Like, as far as, you're right when you say it's not how you imagine it would end, because, I mean, you have this sort of structure of how you expect a final film in a young adult series to go, where, you know, you get that sort of horrible Harry Potter-esque sort of ending where they're all at a train station years later looking back. And there's a sense watching The Death Cure that there's almost a malicious, you're not getting that sort of ending to the story, which part of me appreciated just in terms of seeing something new. But but part of me also felt it was incredibly mean-spirited at times in that way. So things like certain, you know, like throwing up certain sort of resolutions that you would expect the film to have and sort of like skewing them or going a different direction in that respect, which I admired from like a technical and narrative point of view, but which seemed occasionally dark for the sake of being dark in some places.
Sort of manipulative? Or
manipulative, maybe, would be the...
I didn't really find that. I mean, I would say there were a couple of times that they were saved from the oblivion a few too many times.
Yeah.
You know, but I think ultimately where the film ends and where the story ends, like,
it's right for the story.
Yeah.
And it follows the books pretty closely, as far as I can remember.
Yeah. At number 8, Phantom Thread. Paul Thomas Anderson's, Daniel Day-Lewis's swan song as an actor for the moment anyway, which is interesting because this movie hasn't gone particularly wild. I mean, wide? Yes,
wide.
That is the word that I mean to use. Because it has, obviously, it's performed phenomenally well. I think it had the highest per screen average in Ireland last week, but it's still placing only 8th on the chart. Omniplex, I think, have said that they're not really showing it because there's no demand for it.
Hmm.
So it's kind of, it's centralised very much in Dublin, which is a shame.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly is a film that you might expect to go wider. I think people were burned a little bit by Inherent Vice.
I liked Inherent Vice.
Sure, yeah. But I don't think it was...
You can see how it wouldn't really appeal to a lot of people, though.
But I think this is, for want of a better word, it's Paul Thomas Anderson's screwball comedy. I thought it was very funny.
No, it is. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
The main character's name is Reynolds Woodcock.
Yes, and not by accident. You know, this is on purpose.
Yeah. Well, no, apparently himself and Day-Lewis kept laughing at the idea while making the film.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was really funny. I laughed a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I also... It wasn't what I expected at all. I mean, I suppose I associate Paul Thomas Anderson with these big, worthy, kind of dull films in my mind, you know.
Well,
let's talk about The Greatest Showman in a minute. And but this wasn't that at all. Like, it was very entertaining. It was funny. But, you know, don't get the idea that it's some kind of laugh-out-loud comedy. Like,
no.
It's not.
I can figure it out if I want to see
it's
it.
It's a very peculiar sense of humour.
Yeah,
it's...
I mean, Leslie Mandel is really funny in it.
It is funny.
But he's often said that his greatest goal in life would be to make a comedy as good as Ace Ventura When Nature Calls.
Good luck.
That's what he wants to do.
Yeah, that's an aspiration.
Well, he's pretty far from that.
To be clear,
he's getting closer.
Talk about dreaming big here.
Totally close.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I think we had Ronan on the podcast a couple of weeks ago talking about how, like, in many ways, Anderson's masterpiece is not There Will Be Blood or, you know, even The Master. It's actually Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
And that's a very sparse Adam Sandler comedy. It's an unconventional Adam Sandler comedy, but it's also a much more unconventional Anderson film. And I think that there's an element of that to Phantom Thread.
Seems to be the one as well that if you say you're not particularly a big fan of Paul Thomas Anderson movies, everyone tells you to watch Punch Drunk Love.
No, yeah, definitely.
Which I have not seen, so I can't judge.
I would recommend if you are, if you're not a big fan of Anderson.
It's a good...
Or Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler.
If you are a fan of Philip Seymour Hoffman, on the other hand, just dive right in.
Sure. Just watch them all.
Yeah, just watch them all. Even the Hunger Games movies. Number 7, The Post.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the Steven Spielberg Washington Post story. Which is very worthy and very commendable.
Yeah.
No, it is.
I really liked it. I found it really inspiring. Like, out of all the Oscar-nominated films, like, it would be a boring one to win, like, to be honest.
Yeah.
But
it's
probably
the
one
cliche,
that I did so conventional in it. But it's a great story, well told.
Yeah.
It is. Well, that's it.
And I think the approach it took is very interesting. Because, like, it doesn't come... I don't know, maybe this was just me and I wasn't aware going in, but I didn't expect it to focus quite as much on Meryl Streep's character. I expected her to be more of a peripheral presence.
Mm.
But it's so much of it is really structured around her point of view and her journey, and she has the main kind of character arc in it. And I found that very compelling.
Which makes it feel timely in more than just the obvious sort of media standing up.
You even have that one scene where she's sitting at a table with all these men crowding around her telling her what to do. And I'm like, this was literally a meme on Twitter.
Well, there's also even the scene where she leaves court and is sort of met by this crowd of women when she leaves the Supreme Court and stuff like that. So you have this sort of like...
That scene was a little
Spielberg.
On the nose.
That scene was a little on the nose.
Yes. I was with it up until then.
Not the infamous sort of closing Washington Post shared universe scene. They're like, imagine
a sequel.
That,
I really did.
Really?
That. Yeah, because it's funny. It was just wrapping up near the end, and I had said jokingly to my sister who was seeing it with me, I was like, ha ha ha, now watch the exciting sequel, All the President's Men, and then literally at the end started, and I was like, oh yes, Seriously.
My favorite argument of that is that Spielberg sort of taking the Mickey of sort of taking the Mickey of sort of like the Marvel shared universe films or whatever. That, like, this is how you have to make a movie these days.
Yeah, I
or it's just yeah.
Not that self aware, I don't think. Except, well, he's making Ready Player One, so he probably is fairly self aware.
But taking out all the Spielberg references, apparently, which means that you're getting half the novel.
I don't know. I don't know if they're all going to be gone, but it's a studio and licensing issue as well, isn't it? I'm not sure.
Okay, I didn't know that. I sort of imagined there'd be a bit of a. You want me to make a movie about how I'm a pop culture institution? Well, I'll do that for you, sort of element to it.
I hope it's good. Sorry,
yeah.
We're getting off topic.
Well, I mean, hey, as opposed to any other discussion that we've had on this podcast. At number six, Den of Thieves, starring Jared Butler, Pablo Schreiber, Evan Jones, O'Shea Jackson, and Curtis 50 Cent Jackson.
No, I don't know if he's in those. I haven't seen it actually.
He gets an end credit
from the giant poster.
Yeah. That's it. Where it's like choose a side, and on one side there's Jared Butler, and on the other side there's the entire rest of the cast. It's like,
oh, I don't know. Recently confirmed for a sequel as well.
Is it?
Yeah, this sequel this week.
I better go see it.
Made bugger all money, but has been now been confirmed for a sequel.
That's amazing.
There's an audience for it somewhere. Clearly,
audience for Jared Butler.
Yeah, apparently. Butler service, if you will. But
Jared
it's
Butler.
The man of today.
I haven't seen this one.
Well, this
no,
is, yeah,
that
this
Hugo
is,
Boss ad is his finest work.
Yeah, well, this is...
Although,
this is,
I was perhaps controversially a big fan of his turn as Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, I like that film. It's a good film.
Just
and,
saying.
And here you've got him playing late-stage Al Pacino in sort of a basically a remake of Heat, almost. So, you know, you got that
he
going
probably
for
does
it.
A better job than Al Pacino these days.
Literally the Michael Mann of today. at number six, number five, Early Man, the Nick Park film, the Aardvark one.
There's so many films I've missed, and this is another one.
I haven't seen this either, but I really want to. I went to see Den of Thieves instead. I think I chose poorly.
You make your choices.
Priority.
Yeah, and you live with them. At number four, this one we've been looking to, The Greatest Showman.
Yay!
I've heard great things about this. We had Stacey on the podcast last week talking about how it's an amazing experience to see with an audience.
Well, I really enjoyed The Greatest Showman, but, you know, the standout is the soundtrack. Like, I've been listening to the soundtrack ever since. Can't stop singing it. They're going to have the sing-alongs coming out in about a week.
23rd,
I think it is.
You've got an emerging cult classic.
Yeah, and my worry about the sing-alongs is that I can barely get through listening to the CD in my car without almost having a little weep. I don't know how I'm going to get through seeing the sing-along in the cinema. Now, is it a good movie? It's an entertaining movie.
It's amazing to see, because it has become a cult classic. It topped the UK box office in its sixth weekend.
Yeah.
It has climbed to become like a global monster from an opening weekend of $8.8 million in the States when it got feasted upon by Last Jedi. Like, I've gone to the cinema several times to see movies, and there are always gaggles of young people, or teenagers, who are going to see The Greatest Showman for, I think it sounds like the fifth or sixth time, because they're practically singing the songs as they head into the cinemas. It's just amazing to see in this day and age.
I'm really caught up in it. That's actually quite nice to see when you get something that just sort of comes out of nowhere and hoovers up loads of attention.
I'm sorry I've already got to see it once.
But it's really, I mean, it's now made pretty much as much as La La Land ever made in its entire theatrical run, but you would never put those in the same sort of category. It's mad. And it was relatively cheap as well, first-time director. So, I don't know. It's a good musical.
And it made Hugh Jackman happy. And Hugh Jackman deserves to be happy.
He does, every day.
At number three, appropriately enough, Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Hmm.
Yes, controversial film that it is. Yeah, so we'll move on then. At number two, Coco, which we talked about earlier, which is quite a lovely, lovely Disney film and a so-so Pixar film. I've been accused of being heartless for describing it in those terms. And at number one, surprising absolutely nobody.
Right. Yeah. So I can see the thumbnail from here.
Yeah, 50 Shades Freed. Somehow not called 50 Shades Threed, unfortunately. Or as Stacey suggested, 50 Shades 3D.
Oh.
And you could read it as Threed,
okay.
Which was very, very clever.
I haven't seen this. I will see it at some point. I actually, believe it or not, have vague hope for it. I think I'm wrong, judging by what everybody's been saying about it since. But like,
I don't know. I enjoyed the first one.
Yeah,
more so than I ever would have expected.
Did you see the second one?
The second one's better.
The second one was a lot better. Like, it was kind of like it was
hard to
watch.
Continue on that trajectory.
So that's
it's more like.
You can't. I know.
Can't
this is audio medium. This is, but yeah, there was Yeah, degree shades in myself and Daniel's curves.
But the books get more preposterous as they go on as well. And it's kind of when it's there's like a hostage situation and a plane crash. There's a hot architect
in this one, I believe.
In the last one, there was a stalker and there was a helicopter crash.
It was really fun.
Though, to spoil a bit, no, I won't. I'll leave it out.
Spoil a bit.
No, you're never going to see it, right?
The book or the film?
The second one. Was like, I love that there's this plane crash and they think that he's gone. And he literally walks into the door 30 seconds later. Like, there's absolutely no suspense whatsoever. Literally, they're watching the TV and the plane crash, and he's like, "Yeah, it happens." Like,
but people don't come to that movie to not spend time with Christian Grey.
Yeah, it feels like
it was very funny.
Why are we here? Yeah. Like,
Mr. Grey will see you now.
I think that was the whole point. Like, so I don't know. Maybe this won't be as bad as it might be.
Yeah.
Hopefully, possible. I'm going to see it anyway.
I have a curiosity. I watch terrible movies all the time, so I do want to see the 50 Shades. I watched, Book of Henry a week ago, and that was an amazing experience. But anyway, moving on to the new releases this weekend, we have three big ones, because Lady Bird was actually pushed back to next week by Universal over here. It's released in the UK, which is a strange choice, given Saoirse Ronan's sort of, like, credibility here, and, like, the late interview that she's done and all the hype and stuff.
Yeah, and the IFTAs are this weekend, right now, you know.
Well, maybe they're waiting for...
When it sweeps, yeah. Because, I mean, that's going to make the difference. Oscar nominee and IFTA winner, Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah.
We know which one's more important.
BAFTAs as well, but I mean, yeah, it's weird. I don't know.
But anyway, so what we have coming out this week is we have...
Lady Bird, Shape of Water. Oh, no, sorry.
No, we got Shape of Water, which is the leading Oscar nominee with 13 nominations. I think we've all seen it, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's great.
It's beautiful.
Well, I would argue it's great, anyway.
I loved it.
It has many Oscar nominations.
That is all that you... Thank you, Daniel. We also have Father Figures coming out, which has less Oscar nominations.
The worst poster ever.
Yes. It's one of those attention-grabbing, now we've got your attention posters. It's not great. And then finally we have Black Panther, which is the big one, arguably. Obviously, the big global release for Disney, which will do gangbusters. The highest performing sort of ticket pre-sales ever, surpassing Batman Superman.
Yeah.
The most hyped movie of 2008 on social media.
I haven't seen it. But
I'm sure it's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I can't really entertain a world in which it's not good or in some way enjoyable.
It's very good.
I memorably said that about The Last Jedi. But I'm not quite as invested
now,
in
now
this
you're
one,
tempting.
So.
No, it's very good. It's like it's Ryan Coulter, so it's like Creed. The man knows how to make a film. It's highly enjoyable. It's very accessible. It's very fun. It's a big, brightly colored comic book movie, and it's wonderfully sort of timely. And it's got this sort of like rich Afrofuturism thing going on in it.
Mm.
It's wonderful. It's very sort of lavishly constructed. I'm not sure that it exists outside of, like, there's Black Panther the movie, which is great, and then there's Black Panther the cultural phenomenon, which is something much bigger. But we'll probably talk about that when everybody's had a chance to see the movie. But in the meantime, so guys, if people are looking to find you guys online, so if people want a bit more, you know, Grace, Daniel, and Nicola in their lives, where can they find you?
You can find me after Lent on Twitter at Pixie Grace. I'm taking a hiatus for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You
want to
go?
Me? You can also find me on Twitter. It's Average Film Review, so AVG Film Reviews, or also at Ticking, TikKIN.
I don't tweet that much, but I'm on there as at LetterMonkey if you want to find me.
Perfect. All right, take it easy, guys, and we'll be back next week.
I never forget the first moment when I walked in Cure Cinema. I was hooked from there on.